The moment I read today's gospel, I was reminded of a time in the mid-70s when, for some reason, I was asked to deliver a brief message on a Boston radio station. The subject? What was it like after you were ordained a priest? After thinking about it, I responded something like this. After my ordination to the priesthood, I was led to a heavy bronze door. It opened to a blue sky, fluffy white clouds, and there in front of me, a flock of sheep. As the giant door closed with a heavy thud, a deep, loving voice said, "Behold your flock." With a welcoming smile, I walked toward the sheep and said, "Hello," and heard, "Arr." Looking closer, I saw that under those sheepskins were wolves. I ran back, banged on the door, crying for help. The door didn't budge. As that voice said again, "Behold your flock." Cautiously, I walked back as all the flock approached me with bared fangs. Moving forward, they started to circle, low growls continuing. Finally, getting close enough, I touched, lightly stroked a furry back. The animal flinched, but did not snap or bite. Continuing to circle, the flock sniffed at my hand, getting used to the smell of my anxious presence. Obviously a curious flock, the sniffing continued, but no eye contact. Trying not to appear as scared as I felt, my eyes focused on those teeth that threatened to tear me apart. Tried to appear strong, like I knew what I was doing. I thought, Jesus really knew what he was talking about, saying to his disciples, "I'm sending you like sheep in the midst of wolves." Shivers down my back. Getting used to me, they stopped the growling, sniffing, simply paid no attention at all. And strangely, I didn't feel relieved, just lonely. One day, bending down to pick up sermon notes, I was startled by the sight. Under those wolf skins, trying bravely to protect themselves, were scared little lambs. And in tears, my ministry began. Listening to the broadcast as I drove into Boston, which was strange in itself, I heard a response that asked for on the radio. A man said, "Listening to your words, I had to pull over, stopped, and started crying. I too am a priest, and it happened to me." I had a lot to learn, to put aside my assumptions about what people thought, what they thought about me, learned to listen to where they were, who they were, and slowly, through home and hospital visits, parties, life events like baptisms, marriages, burials, heartfelt times beyond spiritual or intellectual, we got used to each other, began to see each other as people, but it wasn't easy. I was expected to understand more than my experience allowed. Supposed to be a mind reader, knowing when people were in the hospital without their telling me. 10 years passed. More crises. Continuing tension through those years. New prayer book, new hymnal, brand new church. Remember those times? New understandings of the Bible, and especially Vietnam. My public opposition to that war caused me to be called and viewed as unpatriotic. The town communist, one man called me. An area with a spectrum of extreme wealth, middle and working class people, educational and social diversity, newcomers, summer people, and year-round summer people who had retired there. Families there since the Mayflower, because originally we were part of Plymouth Plantation. Whaling captains berthed in New Bedford lived there with widow's walk cupolas at the top on the roof so wives could climb up to see if their husband's ship was on the way home, whaling a dangerous business. Marion itself was very conservative, one of two towns in Massachusetts that voted for Goldwater. Imagine, why does God call me to Republican parishes? My expanded family lived in a beautiful, old, 15-room rectory, two blocks from the beach. But after 10 years there, and a roof that we called the planetarium because it had so many holes in it, we wanted our own home. By one vote, the vestry voted it down. One vestry member, very rich, telling me, clergy shouldn't make that kind of money. That hurt. I hadn't realized I'd made a vow of poverty at my ordination. Maybe it was time to leave. My years there already the amount of time for some rector's entire tenure. One Sunday, feeling more alienation, I walked to the center aisle, not the pulpit. As you can imagine, it became very quiet. I told them something like this. I'll never forget. I'd like to describe how I see our situation as your rector. I've tried to work with you, hear you, learn what's important to you, care for you, feeling more confident in our relationship and my leadership, I finally got courage enough to yell, "Charge!" and headed out to confront together the big issues confronting us. Looking back, I saw I was alone, totally alone. You were nowhere in sight. So I went back, found all of you huddled in our ancient chapel. I asked, "What's going on?" A man said, "Did you see the new gold buttons on my jacket?" Another said, "I've got a tummy ache." A woman said, "I've got a horrible headache that won't stop." Another said, "Our son is very sick and we're scared." An older woman said, "The way you talk about the Bible is alien to me, nothing like anything I ever learned growing up." An older man said, "I'm a Korean War veteran. Your outspoken opposition to the Vietnam War is offending a lot of people, including me." In that scenario, I told them, "Thank you for telling me. Tell you what, I promise to notice and appreciate the new buttons on your blazer. I'll pay more attention to your tummy aches and headaches, keep being with you through illnesses, and hope you'll consider following me as I focus on issues facing our communities and nation." You know, in the past 100 years, we've learned a lot more about the Bible. And as your rector, I don't think it's right not to share that information with you. Or Why did I have to go to divinity school or pass canonical exams to be ordained? It's part of my calling to invite you to consider new understandings about the Bible for our time. And about those big issues, national, international, I have to follow the gospel, my conscience, too. Okay? Standing there, feeling very vulnerable, I waited. Finally, some people began to nod yes. Then more of them. Eye contact. Tears. Mine and theirs. Hugs on the way out. I discovered it was not about agenda, but about trust. And that my role as their priest was to constantly recall how God's forgiveness transforms mistakes, even innocent ones, into learnings and grace. New beginnings, over and over, person to person, seeing each other as lambs together, trying to follow the Good Shepherd, each in his and her own unique way. That morning, I asked them to turn to page 612 of our prayer books, and together we recited the 23rd Psalm, "The Lord is my shepherd," and learned to love each other, surpassing agreement, disagreement, religious, biblical, political, or otherwise, which now we could finally gradually hold more lightly as our Good Shepherd Jesus would have us do. In those 25 years there, our mutual acceptance grew, loving each other in spite of differences of every kind. Leaving for California, more tears, but this time from mutual appreciation and deep love. As Jesus told his disciples, "I am sending you as sheep among wolves, but it is hoped those wolves are not us Christians." But it keeps happening in the history of the church. Think of the Crusades, the Inquisition, the churches demolishing the heritage of Indian children, and I'm Cherokee, citing the Bible to approve slavery. Christians loyal to Hitler. Christians in our government during World War II, not allowing Jewish refugees facing certain death if they went back to disembark here. Not allowed. Many died. Anti-gay rules in the Church of Nigeria and many churches here. Apartheid in the Church of South Africa. And you know, it's said traditionally the biggest separation of races here in the United States was worship on Sunday mornings. Now we face the white male dominance of Christian nationalism with its bigotry against immigrants, removing blacks from Congress. And recently, the Department of Defense removing almost 200 religious traditions from its list of recognized religions, leaving only 31 of us, excluding Mormons, Unitarians, etc. Government telling us which religions are acceptable. Like early centuries, as Rome declared the newfangled Christianity illegal. Believing in the separation of church and state, I was incredulous when on Thursday, the President of the United States met with Roman Catholic cardinals, three of them, to, quote, "consecrate the United States to the Sacred Heart of Jesus for our 250th anniversary. Are you kidding me? All happening here in our country right now. carried out self-righteously in the name of Christ. I think we are called to keep being aware of such things in our midst and to keep peacefully working to end prejudice and injustice in church as well as country. No matter our size here at St. Luke's, we can keep gathering as a faithful flock to hear Jesus' voice in Holy Scripture and in each other, serving others. With all people of goodwill, we can live respectfully together. Diverse flocks, Muslim, Buddhist, whatever, each following the voice of its own shepherd as we follow ours. In harmony, we can sing God's praise, giving thanks with open, loving hearts for God's all-encompassing acceptance, forgiveness, and love.